We're going to call the House Committee on Rules to order, and there is a quorum present, so let the record show that the quorum is present. Fellow members, we are going to the introduction of committee measures. There's a bunch of them that you have in front of you, and I guess I want to make sure that people understand for the record that as we introduce committee bills to come through the committees, introducing them has nothing to do with the support or non-support or whatever of these bills. They are clearly just being introduced as a courtesy to introduce them, and then they may or may not even come back to our committee. We'll see on some of those, but the issue is getting them up for debate and consideration. You should have a copy of each of those LCs, because I think that's important. And with that, I will open a work session for the introduction of committee measures. There are five LC drafts that have been provided to each member of the LC committee. And I guess before I ask that, does anybody have any angst on any of these with respect to introducing those committee bills? I know that there are angst in other ways. So if we should do them at one time or one each time. Yes, Representative Berger.
Chair Roblin, for the record, thank you very much for making it perfectly clear that by voting to accept these as committee bills, we in no way endorse these measures.
Yes. I speak for all members and myself. I speak for all members and myself for that on that statement.
Thank you.
But, clearly. With that, yes.
Mr. Chair, let's do them in mass.
Then Representative Edwards?
Mr. Chair, I move that the following LCs be introduced as committee bills. Those would be LC 451, dated 12-29-08, LC 2529, dated 2-11-09, LC 2061, dated 2-12-09, LC 3054, dated 2-12-09, and LC 3054-1, dated 2-12-09.
So, Representative Edwards moves the following LCs be introduced as committee bills. I will leave the dates out and just say LC 451, LC 2529, LC 2061, LC 3054, and LC 3054-1. Do I see any objection or comments? I'm sorry.
Comments, objection.
Yes. I'll go with comments.
I just want to reiterate the comments of Representative Berger and Representative Jensen that by voting for these bills at this time, in no way should be construed as endorsement of these bills.
I one more time would love to acknowledge that Representative Girard has made clear that in putting these bills forward, we are not endorsing any of them. It is just to get them introduced. I appreciate Representative Girard, Representative Jensen, and Representative Berger making that perfectly clear. And for the record, I would like it to be perfectly clear.
And Mr. Chair, I also want to be clear that as the maker of the motion, I was not endorsing any of these bills that... Just simply moving the process along, having it drafted.
Anything.
And I appreciate that Representative Reed has not needed to state what is the obvious, that he is not in
it. It is now perfectly clear,
okay.
Mr. Chair.
So,
thank
is there
you.
Any objection for the introduction of these bills? Seeing none, so ordered. Just so people know, with respect to introduction, I am fairly kind to colleagues on both sides of the aisle if they ask me for an introduction. I probably will have to change that at some point in the near future. Okay. We are now going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2588, the National Popular Vote Compact. Did I close the other? Oh, I guess.
Yeah, you said we did.
Okay. So this is the only measure before the committee. We do have a number of people that want to speak and at least one presentation. And so during those introductions, so I am pleased to have people here. So with that, we'll have a short explanation by our committee administrator, Jerry Watson. This one. Okay. Okay.
Thank you, Chair Roblin.
House Bill 2588 enacts Oregon's participation in an interstate compact for the election of the U.S. president by national popular vote. It provides that the compact takes effect when enacted by states cumulatively possessing a majority of all electoral votes. It establishes procedures requiring the chief election official of each state participating in the compact to A, separately determine the national vote winner by tallying votes in all states, those that belong to the pact and those that do not, and B, certify the electoral slate nominated in that state in association with the national popular vote winner. Provides a mechanism for the state to withdraw from the compact and terminates the compact if the Electoral College is abolished. The existing mechanism for selecting a president provides for indirect election through the Electoral College. Most presidential elections have resulted in the eventual Electoral College winner also winning the popular vote, but not always. Proponents of SB 2588 assert that the president should be selected through the Electoral College should reflect the national popular vote. The concept of electing U.S. presidents by national popular vote is not new, but increased attention has been devoted to the idea since the hotly contested presidential election in November 2000. One approach, abolishing the Electoral College, requires a federal constitutional amendment, and in the usual case, the support of the legislatures in three-quarters of the states. Other approaches include distributing Electoral College electors within a state by proportional representation, allocating those electors through a combination of congressional district and statewide elector selection, and the approach taken in SB 2588, a compact between states to cast Electoral College votes for the national popular vote winner. Opponents of national popular vote of a national popular vote compact assert that A, that the compact approach seeks to do indirectly what likely cannot be done directly, in other words, amend the U.S. Constitution, and B, that it negates the impact on presidential elections of the voters in states which do not belong to the compact. At this point, four states have enacted versions of an Electoral College National Popular Vote compact.
Thank you very much. And with that, we will call Justin Martin, Dr. John Koza, to speak. And I hope I got those names right. Martin, I think it is. Anyway.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Justin Martin. I'm here today on behalf of National Popular Vote. We will briefly tell you what National Popular Vote is, why this measure is so important, and how we intend for this plan to work. The National Popular Vote bill would guarantee the presidency to the candidate who receives the most votes in all 50 states. Currently, we have introduced this bill in 49 states. As of today, we have passed 23 legislative chambers. And we have passed and become law in four states, Hawaii, Illinois, Maryland, and New Jersey. Approximately 1,500 of your colleagues throughout the country have supported National Popular Vote, either through sponsorship or an actual yes vote on the floor. We ask that you join us in this landmark measure in making every vote count in this country, and most importantly, making Oregonians' vote count again in presidential elections and Oregon issues relevant once again, not just during presidential campaigns, but also once the president takes the office. So with that, I'm proud to introduce to you today Dr. John Koza, who is the originator of the National Popular Vote Plan, and we will be brief, but we will be available for questions throughout the presentation. So thank you again, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the committee for taking time to hold this hearing. My name is John Koza. I'm the chairman of National Popular Vote. The problem that's being addressed by this bill stems from the winner-take-all rule, which is a state law here in Oregon, as well as 47 other states, that awards all of your state's electoral votes to the presidential candidate who gets the most votes inside your state. And because of this winner-take-all rule, when candidates run for president, they have no reason to campaign in states where they are either safely ahead or hopelessly behind, because you gain no extra electoral votes by coming close. So the candidate who's behind stays, still gets no electoral votes as long as he or she is under 50%. The result of that is that in presidential campaigns, candidates spend 98% of their visits after the convention and 98% of their money in just 15 states, and actually two-thirds of their visit in money in just six states, the reason being that these closely divided battleground states are what get you to the White House, and the other two-thirds of the states really don't matter. Now, this is not a matter of whether Oregon babies get kissed by presidential candidates. It's a matter of whether Oregon issues are on the minds of presidential candidates when they're running for office and forming their platform and making commitments to the public. And it's also what's on the mind of a sitting president after he or she is elected, because they're inevitably looking for re-election in the next election, and they look to those battleground states for the issues that are important. So issues of importance to Idaho or Oregon or Washington or California, or such as Pacific Rim trade or high tech or timber issues, simply are not on the radar screen of presidential candidates, whereas issues like coal or steel quotas that are important in, say, Ohio and Pennsylvania are very much the top of the mind. The other problem is that in four of our 56 presidential elections, the second place candidate has ended up with the presidency. And in five of the last 12 of presidential elections, a shift of a few thousand votes in one or two states would have elected the second place candidate. For example, in 2004, a shift of 60,000 votes in Ohio would have elected John Kerry, even though President Bush was ahead by 3.5 million votes. The Constitution gives you, the state legislatures, the exclusive plenary power to decide how you award your electoral votes. The system that we have now, the winner-take-all rule, was used in just three states in 1789. It was not the choice of the founders. It certainly is not in the Constitution. It's not required by the Constitution. And it came into being before the Civil War, became popular among the majority of the states because of jockeying for regional dominance that occurred then. It was not installed by a constitutional amendment. It was installed by ordinary statutes in states, and it can be changed at any time, as evidenced by the fact that Nebraska switched to a congressional district system in 1992 and Maine switched to a district system in 1969. This bill has all kinds of editorial support. Nationwide, it's polled in the 70% since the 1940s when Gallup first started polling. In a recent poll in Oregon, 76% of 800 Oregon voters support a national popular vote, including 70% of Republicans and slightly more independents, and 82% of the Democrats. We have a national advisory board having Republicans such as former Utah Senator Jake Garn and former Republican Congressman Buchanan from Alabama, and Democrats such as Indiana former Senator Birch Bayh and former New York Congressman John Downing. Thank you very much for having us here today, and we appreciate your consideration.
Thank you. Questions of this? Representative Girard.
Yes, sir. Welcome to Oregon. There's been criticism of the popular vote in the event of a recount. Could you respond to that?
If you're concerned, Mr. Chair Roblin and Representative Girard, if you're concerned about recounts, a national popular vote would reduce the chance of a recount. And the reason is that the chance of a recount is one in 332 elections. This comes from a study of 7,600 elections that was made over the last 25 years. So you can think of a recount as being one bullet in a 332-chamber gun, and with a single national pool of votes, you would fire that gun once every 4 years, and you would have a close election once every 1,300 years. Our current system is really 51 separate elections, so that every 4 years we're firing that gun 51 times. And our 56 presidential elections have been 2,084 separate elections. If you divide that by 332, you get six. And in fact, there have been five hotly contested state counts in our 56 presidential elections, 2000 in Florida, the Hawaii result in 1960, which was reversed and switched around by the Hawaii Supreme Court, the Louisiana result in the Hilton Hayes election in 1876, and another one in Florida and South Carolina. So a single pool of votes has a probability of recount once in 1,300 years, but it's far less than the chance of recount that exists in the current system, because our current system is 51 separate elections every 4 years.
Thank you.
Other questions for this panel? I don't think we have any. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your time and attention.
Yeah, we appreciate you coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I agree. Yep. So the next person will be Bob Williams from Evergreen Freedom Foundation, Olympia, Washington. While we're waiting to get that hooked up, you all should have received also a letter from the Secretary of State in your packet today that shows her support of this bill. And I just want to make sure that it was on the record that that was received. Yeah, so it's written testimony that has been received.
Mr. Chair, I'll start without red and wait.
And no problem.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Williams. I'm the founder and senior fellow of the Evergreen Freedom Foundation, a public policy research group in Washington State. I'm also an ALEC scholar, American Legislative Exchange Council scholar, and been working with ALEC on this particular issue. you had the staff describe what the bill is all about, and as you know, there are 538 electorals, and Oregon has seven. Our founders considered direct election of the president. But because of the fact that we're a constitutional republic and respecting the individual states, they chose not to go with direct election of the president in order to ensure order and liberty. The constitutional procedure, if you want to change this, is to use the Constitution, not to try to go around the Constitution and pass a compact to go around it. From the time our country Constitution was adopted, there have been over 1,000 amendments affecting the Electoral College introduced into the United States Congress. And only the 12th Amendment has passed. That's been the only one that has passed. The current attempt, as been mentioned, is the national popular vote, and it's designed to bypass the constitutional amendment process. By guaranteeing the presidency to the candidate who receives the most popular votes in all 50 states in the District of Columbia, this interstate compact only goes into effect when a majority of electoral states pass that, 270 of the 538 electoral votes. And right now they said four.